Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast, episode 214. I haven't said the number in a while, so I figured I would. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Macko. It's Bob. How you doing?
Matt, I like how you managed to make this about you and your choices, literally in the first sentence.
Well, you know, I'm efficient.
Mm-hmm. Usually, it'll take you a good paragraph before you point out what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Oh, thank. Okay, so you opened the door. Guess what, Bob? I'm wearing a bathing suit. I'm walking around in a bathing suit.
In the house?
In the house. Then I'm up at the cottage, and then outside, the water's still cold. But it's like a really warm day here. It's bathing suit weather day, baby.
Isn't it a little, how do I say this delicately? You have to be pretty comfortable with yourself to swim on a day like today.
You don't swim. You jump in, you feel the water, and then you get the hell out as fast as possible.
It's very good for your circulation, cold water. Yeah. Do you ever see the videos of Wim Hof and the Wim Hof method where people submerge themselves in freezing ice baths? It's apparently one of the best things you can do for your overall well-being is take frequent freezing cold showers and baths.
It is. It is. It's good for, as you said, circulation, for weight loss, for all these things. I just want to know the other end of those videos. Where are the people that attempted that who died of hypothermia?
I don't think it happens right away, but I bet you there's been a few heart attacks. I did the polar plunge once. Have you ever done it?
No.
I did it 2 winters ago. I would have done it this winter, but I don't think it was organized anywhere. I was up in Huntsville, and I went over to the Hidden Valley Resort where they were doing it. They had a hole cut in. I posted the video, but I did it as an Instagram story because, you know, it just seems something so vain about pictures of yourself for a long time. I don't know. I just felt like I don't need anybody looking at me for that long. So for one day, the me doing the plunge was up there. It was fun. I really enjoyed it. It was cold, though.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be disappointing if it wasn't? If it was like, it was kind of like a warm bath. Like, that would sort of take away from the accomplishment.
Everyone was like, wow, was that really cool? And I'm like, yeah, it was. Do you want to do it? And they're like, no.
No, not at all.
There's a lot of things in life that are, you know, Kim Gordon of Sonic Youth once said, we pay money to go to see shows, but really what we pay to see is to see people who are confident.
So it took me 18 seconds to do my look at me thing, and it took you 2 minutes and 42 seconds to do one of your, you know, little artsy, obscure artist quotes.
Yeah, well, we're on brand as we start. So shall we go to hockey, basketball? Where do you want to go? There's a lot happening in the sports world, buddy.
There's so much. It's you know, like it's like a cat with a laser pointer. I will start with I'll start with this. How much of a hypocrite am I that for a bunch of days on my radio show, I said Tom Wilson needed to be suspended for a game, that he's a goon, that he's a thug. And I was rooting for him hard last night in the Washington-Boston game to the point where I got angry that the officials called him for unsportsmanlike conduct, for diving. I was angry. I'm like, no, Tom Wilson is a model citizen. How dare you, officials? And it's only because I don't want Boston to win.
Matt, two words. And we'll get back to Washington and Boston in a second. But two words. Brian Marchment. Marchment for years was one of the great knee hunters in the NHL. And oh, how many breaks for Landsberg I wrote decrying Brian Marchment. And oh, what is to be done with Brian Marchment until he became a Leaf.
Yep. He was a great guest. Super nice guy.
So nice. And in which case, suddenly he became an example of tough play. A guy you don't like to play against.
You're absolutely right, Bob. I love sports. It allows us to be so emotionally irresponsible.
Yeah. It really is one of the few areas where you really can have no clue what you're doing and just make your decisions based on what feels good for you.
I like that.
Yeah, no, I have to say for most of us, after I finished saying it, I thought, well, for a lot of us, that's what sports are for. For you, that's what waking up is for.
Exactly. Now what am I going to do? There's so many possibilities.
I'm going to be me all day.
Hooray.
Boston, you know, Washington had their foot, their skate, as it were, on the throat of the Bruins.
Yeah.
They got a one goal lead with the ability to go up 2-0 and a stranglehold on the playoff. And they got 5 minutes to go. And you knew when it went to 3-3, there's no way they were going to win in overtime. Boston was not going to allow that to happen two games in a row. Now they're back in it. I don't know if momentum's a real thing or not. I really don't. But I do know this. They could have been up 2-0, and now they're not. And I think Boston's going to win.
And it bummed me out. So there I was last night. You know, I poked my head in the game when it was at 2-2. And then when they score, Washington scored, and Tom Wilson, I'm like, I love you, Tom Wilson. You're my favorite. I'm like, oh, yeah, a week ago, I thought you were the shining example of what's wrong about hockey. But bleep that. I didn't want Marchand to win.
Well, there was this one random shift last night. And I'm watching as that Marchand, Bergeron, Pasternak line, they're in the zone. And it's a broken play. And the puck skitters off into the corner. And I thought to myself, okay, let's see what happens now. And you know what happened next, Matt? For about 30 seconds, Boston kind of just chipped it back and forth, just fighting these little one-on-one battles. And eventually, they wrested control of the puck quite comfortably, kicked it out to the point, threw it down low, and it turned down into, I'm going to say, at the very least, an A-minus scoring chance. And I thought to myself, how many teams, when it was a broken play and it skittered into the corner, would have been happy to just fall back on defense?
Yep.
But no. They were tenacious. They were rabid on that puck. And as soon as they applied themselves, you know, sometimes you play little games with yourself in your head where you're like, whatever happens next, that's what's going to happen in the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did that with this play, and I'm watching it, and I thought, oh, Jesus, this is exactly who they're going to be to play against. And they're going to be so hard to beat. I have a theory of this, and I'll get right back to it, but this must break your heart because you hate Marchand.
Oh, I know. Stupid big nose scored in overtime. It's the worst.
Yeah, of course he did. So here's what I was thinking, Matt. Because everything comes back to the Leafs. What's this got to do with the Leafs, right? If the Leafs were to lose to Tampa, well, here's all the scenarios. If the Leafs lose to a team that is Canadian, that's a disaster.
Disaster.
Disaster. Whether it's Montreal or whoever comes next, that's a disaster. If they lose to Tampa, people will go, it's a stepping stone. They're a great team. The Leafs are learning how to win. They got this far. The next step is to learn how to beat a team like Tampa. People won't be happy, but it'll be seen as progress. Kind of like when the Raptors made it to the conference final. Nobody really expected them to beat Cleveland. It was just they were glad they were there. And I think there'll be a bit of that with the Leafs. If they lose to Carolina, there'll be I describe it as the known unknown. None of us really know much about Carolina. We just know that they're a quote-unquote really good team.
Yes.
So people won't like it, but they won't take it personally. If they lose to Boston...
Fuck that.
It will devastate people. All the reasons. But the number one reason is because why is Boston still better than us? Why is it no matter how good we get, Boston is still better? They're the only team in the Eastern Conference outside of Canada that we could lose to, with the possible exception of the New York Islanders, that we couldn't live with.
Yeah, that would be just shameful. Absolutely. If it was Boston, like that's a, I don't want to come to work for the next couple days.
The mood will be so, and of course it would have mean that they cleared two rounds, which is more than they've done in almost 20 years. I mean, even clearing one round is more than they've done in almost 20 years.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter because they will have lost to Boston. And it'll be like the emotional equivalent of when Mark Jones from ESPN called Toronto LeBronto.
Yeah. Oh God. Oh, ooh. That's getting a little sports PTSD with that. But yeah, you know, Bob, you hit it on the nail. And Boston had a great year. And, you know, if they face Toronto, that means they eliminated some really good teams. But if the Leafs lose to Colorado, fine. Hey, Kadri, you got a title. But if they lost to Boston, that'd be the worst.
There's no other team we could lose to, with the possible exception of the Islanders. And the Islanders, they're not a known unknown. And as you've pointed out many times on the pod, there's the Lou Lamoriello factor. That we would have gotten rid of the guy who was the architect for the team that beat us.
Yeah.
It would be bad, but it wouldn't be awful because we haven't lost to them before. But two bone-crushing losses to the Bruins, this would make three. I think it would kill us.
Yeah, I think we would, in fact, literally, and I'm using this term correctly, we would literally all die, which would be very weird for all the non-sports fans in Toronto. Bob,
it would be like Thanos snapping his fingers, but yes. Only Leafs fans.
Yeah, I guess what? Every Leaf fan, as they were turning to dust, would go, sweet relief. Oh, thank you, my Lord and Savior, Thanos.
So true. You know, one of the things that nobody wants to talk about with the Avengers, Thanos was crazy, but was he?
Careful.
The whole thing about there aren't enough resources and this and that, and people got to make tough decisions. He's an interesting villain. Because there's a lot of villains who have the mad plan that are based on things that we can't deny.
It's a great point, because so many of the villains, it's I want to blow up the earth or I want to run the earth. And all Thanos wants to do is bring balance to the universe. His ultimate goal is something we could all get behind. It's just the path there that was, how we say now, problematic.
Mad plan. Sensible goal. The goal.
Yeah.
He didn't want to steal all the money. He didn't want to enslave the universe and have everyone bow to him. What happened when he succeeded? He retired. He went to Muskoka.
Yeah. Beyond that,
in space, Muskoka.
Bob, beyond that, he became all farm to table. He's out there farming and he's cooking his roots and things like that. I don't even think he was eating meat, which is great for the environment. I mean, let's face it, except for the whole murder 50% of everyone in existence, Thanos, not a bad fella.
Right?
Yeah.
So that was the quick little sidebar. I've always thought that Thanos was a much more interesting villain than Marvel allowed him to be, because there were too many interesting philosophical questions that got in the way of just like Captain America using Thor's hammer.
Oh, that was great, though.
Wasn't it, though?
Oh, that was so good. Avengers Assemble.
The link to the new Loki trailer. Did you see it?
I did. I did see the new Loki trailer. It looks great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to do it now, or do you want to do a little bit more hockey here?
I'll do a little bit more hockey, and then we'll get back there. By the way, Bob, the one great thing, if the Islanders beat the Leafs, would be the 3,000-word Steve Simmons column in praise of Lamoriello while taking digs at Dubas, followed by Twitter spending 36 hours in their usual predictable meltdown anger at Steve.
There is going to be an infinity stone of anger at Steve Simmons if that happens.
It's got to be great.
Series that you're most interested in that isn't a Leaf series that you're least interested in.
Like everyone else, Tampa, Florida is what I'm most interested in, and least interested in, I don't know, probably Minnesota and Vegas. I feel good. Cause like, I feel like the hockey hipster, they'll be like, oh no, Kirill Kareffra, whatever the guy's name is on Minnesota. And they'll tell you all these great things about the Wild. And I'm like, shut up. We get it. You know a lot about hockey. But it's not for me.
I'm with you there. I really think this Florida series, if it's super tight, like if it goes four or five games, it won't have much impact. But if it goes 6-7 and they're real, like it's a good back and forth kind of series, there's an opportunity to make some ground up in the States over this. I was talking to some of the Apple people today, and they brought up being excited about Tampa and Florida. And I haven't heard this kind of talk since Pittsburgh and Washington. Now, I don't think this rivalry is Pittsburgh-Washington because there aren't the two sort of tentpole, you know, Crosby versus Ovechkin kind of things. But
yeah,
just for geographical proximity and the fact that teams don't like each other, fingers crossed that this turns into a thing.
Oh, 100%. That's why I think a lot of people were bummed out that Florida lost, not just because we're not rooting for Tampa. And I love that we're upset at them for their salary cap circumvention when Toronto does it all the time. But we needed Florida to win game one because we know Tampa's the clear favorite. And the path for the underdog always starts with a game one win. Let the favorite chase you. So now tonight, this game means everything because I don't think anyone thinks Florida's coming back if they're down 0-2.
Yeah, that would be really hard to see. We're not going to talk again until Friday, which means the Leafs game will have already happened. Game one will be in the books. So is there any, is there any preview stuff you want to talk about? I have one question, but is there anything you want to get to?
Not really, because I mean, we're so talked out by it. I mean, the only point I made was for a team that kicked as much ass as the Maple Leafs, they do have plenty of unknowns. Jack Campbell's never played in the playoffs. Hyman's back. He's been out for a while. Foligno's on the second line. He's played two games with them. Riley Nash hasn't played a game. He's centering the third line. So this team, I think, is going to win in six at worst, maybe even five. But it's remarkable for a team this heavily favorite, there are these little unknowns.
I would argue that the Riley Nash thing is a big unknown because he's literally never played for the Leafs before.
Yes.
I can't really think of too many cases where the playoffs start and you have a debut of a brand new player in a fairly important role. So that qualifies, even though it's not like a make or break kind of thing. There's a lot of question marks how he's going to fit in. You know, this is just something I want to reiterate before the whole thing starts. I think we know what we're going to get out of the first line. We assume that Hyman's going to come back and he's going to contribute. But if it's him or Foligno or even Thornton, in the end, we just believe enough in Marner and Matthews that we believe we're going to get something special there. The bottom six is this churning, roiling, boiling pot of decent players. And Sheldon Keefe will have to figure out the formula. I think the second line's fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
I've said this before, Maddie. I understand why they went for Foligno. I don't disagree with the logic that went behind that decision. But are we so convinced that the Leafs have the secondary scoring they need to win a series against a really good team? I think they can beat a mediocre team like Montreal. They could, you know, they've shown that they can beat Edmonton and Winnipeg. But when they get to the really good ones, you know, at that point, would you rather have a Taylor Hall than a Foligno? I just think it's really interesting, and I feel like the solution to this is going to be Nylander has to play really well, and he has to play really well often.
Yes, he does. And stupid Taylor Hall, if he didn't score last night to tie it at three, I was yelling goalie interference. It wasn't, but I was still yelling it.
I think it was.
I think it was as well, stupid Boston. Well, two thoughts here. One, you're absolutely right. There still is a bit of a yeah, but with Nylander, and it's just out there. And you can say it's bias or mainstream media, whatever you want, but there's still just a little hint of yeah, but from a variety of people. The key, though, again, the boring answer is look how Tampa won. When they won the cup, when they won game one, it was Point, Kucherov, Hedman, and Vasilevsky. And it was those four guys putting up massive numbers every night. So it's going to have to be Matthews, Marner. They don't have a Hedman, but they do have a good all-around defense. But for the Leafs, it's, you know what? I've just talked my way out of it because the Leafs don't have a Hedman or a Vasilevsky. Yes, they're going to need more depth scoring than what Tampa needed last year.
I don't think that we're the Lightning.
No.
Even though we talk about the Leafs being a cup contender, if we're honest with ourselves, I don't think we're the Lightning. But we're a damn good team. If everybody plays damn well, we don't have enough talent that guys who are in important positions can not contribute to a series. Anybody can have an off game, but we can't be having none of those no points in four games from William Nylander. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but if it does, that could sink the team. And a guy like Taylor Hall is insurance against that. I'm not making the case for Hall. All I'm saying is we're going to have a lot of people looking back, myself included, questioning Dubas when a guy like Hall can go for a second rounder, because I'm not 100%, and I think most people disagree with me, and I am fine with that because I would love to be wrong. I just hope we have enough secondary scoring.
The funny thing is, Foligno, what's that?
I hope I'm wrong.
I hope you're wrong as well. I think Foligno, I see the argument that Foligno is a better fit with the Maple Leafs than what Taylor Hall would have been. So the funny thing is, for the Leafs to fully justify bringing in Nick Foligno and giving up a first-round pick instead of maybe trying to get Hall, we didn't even know if he could have got Hall. But then that's up to William Nylander. That's up to Nylander to be at his best so that we're not lamenting what a Taylor Hall could have meant to that second line.
I want to get back to you in the bathing suit for a second, if I can.
Sure.
As a kid, were you the kind of kid who wore a bathing suit as underwear?
No, not usually. I wasn't that late. I wasn't that lazy with that one.
One of the greatest joys in the world was wearing a bathing suit as underwear and then just running down to the lake and whipping off your shorts and going right in.
Yep.
Oh my God, what a joy that was. Do you remember when we were kids, they made those Adidas shorts and they had the underwear sewn in?
Yep.
Do they still make those, or did people realize that's a recipe for disaster and stop?
I haven't been in a store in 17 months. I got no idea. I imagine they don't anymore, because a lot of things that were big in the 80s, they don't really make a lot of anymore.
Do you have a good bathing suit, or are all your bathing suits basically an audition to be an extra on a Jeff Foxworthy show?
I don't have an elite bathing suit, but I've got like a high-end game manager. As long as everything else is working, this bathing suit will do the job.
I have an elite EPL striker of a bathing suit.
Ooh.
Because I was training for the triathlons there for a few summers.
Yep.
I can't fit into this bathing suit right now. It's aspirational. Yeah. But I needed something that had low drag coefficient.
Of course.
And so I went out and I got one. And I have to say, nothing makes you feel quite as sleek as a small bathing suit. It's not a Speedo, but really, it's kind of like a Speedo and a half.
Mm. Are you going to throw that on the old Instagram?
Oh, no. No, that will not be happening. Although, you know, when you're swimming in a public place, you know, you got to get in and out of the water. So it's a little more demonstrative than I tend to be.
That's a quick scurry.
It does encourage you. You got the towel wrapped around your waist like some kind of like sarong.
Yeah, there's not a lot of linger. There's not a lot of linger in the getting out of the pool and getting into the towel.
I could go from pool to towel in about 2.8 seconds.
Yeah, I think that's.
I want a fancy bathing suit, though, because it's a very utilitarian looking one. It's just blue. It's just dark blue because that means business. But I want to get like a Motorhead bathing suit or something like that. Like I need something that's kind of fun, but doesn't look like, you know, I borrowed it from Joe Bowen.
I bet Joe Bowen has got the most colorful, awesome bathing suits.
First time I met Joe Bowen, he was wearing, what are those pants called? Zubaz?
Yep.
Yeah, Green Bay Packers Zubaz pants.
Oh, God.
He would have been in his 40s, and we were at work.
Oh, so it was his formal wear. I have an image of him where he's got a bathing suit, and it's got the Fighting Irish logo on the front with the raised fist right exactly where you think it would be.
Well, that's a Fighting Irish, I guess.
Oh,
the look. That's the look.
Yeah.
I would suggest, of all the people I ever worked with in sports radio, nobody wore more sportsy type stuff than Mike Hogan. He almost always had a football jersey on.
I will throw out two other names. One surprising, Dave Naylor, but only when he did morning radio. Then it was always, you know what though? Does morning radio count? Because Naylor and Richards, every day I knew which sweaters it would be.
Richards would roll in and he would look like, you know, the roadie for Slick Toxic.
Yes.
Which, you know, was how he looked at 3 p.m. too.
It's consistent.
Yeah, he had a thing. Naylor was very different, though, because if you caught him and he was like cozy Dave, he was just like football, you know, paraphernalia. But then when he was getting ready for TV, you could always tell because it was like he flipped a switch and he became super groomed.
He didn't have a lot in the middle. You're right. It's either Michigan State sweater that he's worn 12 days in a row or suit and tie.
By the way, Friedman, since we're talking just about general aesthetics and broadcasters we know and love,
yeah,
he's starting to look like he wants to take over from who the hell's the guy who played Ray Donovan again?
Liv Schreiber.
Thank you, Liv Schreiber. He looks like he wants to take over from him as Sabretooth in the upcoming X-Men movies. Doesn't he have like a kind of a smart, university-educated Sabretooth look to him?
He does. Yes. That, you know what? Okay. That is a great one.
I think Sabretooth.
Okay. So you're going Sabretooth. I'm going that Elliot Friedman is watching John Tory press conferences. He's like, I can out crazy your hair.
Man, John Torrey. Look, you know how I look, Matt.
Yeah.
You know how I've looked most of my adult life. And even I'm going like, wow, Torrey, you're you're keeping it cash.
You know what? It's you know what it is, Bob?
No.
It's virtue signaling. It's like, I've obeyed all the rules. I've never got my hair cut. Look how shitty my hair looks. John Torrey's hair, it's a follicle virtual signal.
I may have said this before. I can't remember. We've been doing COVID shows for 14 months now. But it reminds me of the Tim Burton Batman when the Joker puts poison into the various beauty products in Gotham. And so newscasters have to go on without any beauty products, and they look like they've been through a hurricane. That's how everyone's starting to look on TV, except for Kevin Bieksa, who looks amazing.
He looks amazing.
Seriously, he looks kind of like it's like if Sean Avery wasn't Sean Avery.
You're right. We got to murder him. Bieksa, that is.
He's really got it going on. Yeah. Hey, I got some Raptors questions for you if we're done with Leafs panic.
Yeah.
The Leafs are going to win in six, so I'm not panicked, but the Boston thing's got me, you know, attentional bias and so on and so forth.
Yeah,
do you want to do Loki or do you want to do a little Raptors here?
I've got a NBA question for you, but real quick, here's another question. Bob, are you worried about legal help?
Always.
Well, if you are, you should have answered no because you've jumped.
Yeah, no, I screwed
Let's
that up.
Let's do that again. Okay, wait, hold on. Bob, do you ever question any issues with legal help?
No, I don't need to. I've got Jeff Pollock on my side.
That's right. So do I. Jeff Pollock is our lawyer and our sponsor. If you want all your legal questions answered, call 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088, or you can get them at jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. So all your legal questions will be answered, just like Bob and I.
So, Matt, I sent out a question to you a little while ago just about why don't they make small bottles of wine, like 375 milliliter ones? And he, being Jeff, sent us an email, and included was an Amazon listing for a small bottle that cost $379.
Mm-hmm.
How do I set my computer so that any of those kinds of suggestions go straight to trash?
Well, first, Bob, I know your email. It's 50-50. You're going to read it anyway to begin with. And second, do you realize that the bottle he sent you of Yakum? I always mispronounce it. It's basically the highest, the best sweet wine ever made on planet Earth is what he sent you.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that why they have pop-sized bottles? Because it's sweet?
Yeah, that's why. Because, you know, you don't need a whole bottle of it, so it's just a half bottle. And those guys are so good. If the vintage isn't perfect, they won't make that wine. They will just sell the grapes off to someone else, and they'll take a huge financial hit because they don't ever want to put out anything that isn't up to their level.
I kind of respect that. Okay, so you had an NBA question. What was it, bud?
I'm going to throw two stats out at you, and this is in honor of tomorrow's play-in game between the Lakers and Golden State. I want to know which stat impresses you more. All right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, stat number one. Despite being on a team with not a lot of offensive help, Steph Curry became the oldest player since Michael Jordan to lead the NBA in scoring. So that's stat number one. Stat number two, LeBron James going in as, you know, most likely, you know, the eighth seed. This will be the first time in his career he's ever entered the playoffs as anything lower than the four seed. He's always at least had home court for the first round. Of those two stats, which one's more impressive?
That's amazing. And I'm going to say the LeBron one, although they're both incredible. I'll explain. So there are so many things that can happen over the course of an NBA season that are out of your control. And yet we know how much one player can influence the outcome of a game. So what that says to me was, for all the things that could have gone wrong and have gone wrong in an NBA season, LeBron was so good because he played so many games that a team could never be anything less than really good. So he made literally every team he's ever been on a really good team, sometimes entirely by himself. So what Steph did is incredible, but Steph has done it once. It's amazing. But LeBron, this is a tribute to 15 plus years of never being anything less than incredible, ever.
Yep.
So LeBron, how about you?
No, I agree. In terms of like the longevity of it, you give it to LeBron, because and any stat that's based on longevity, I think is more just has a bigger feel to it than what of a single season. Here's the remarkable thing is that he's averaging like this was his career high in points, his career high in shots. Talk about Steph Curry. And yet his field goal percentage was still higher than his average. Like he shot like over 48% despite shooting the ball more times than ever before on in a season where he was blitzed more than in any other season ever before. Like the degree of difficulty that Steph Curry is doing this year, it's incredible. And one other stat I'll throw it at you and then I'll shut up. But Golden State, they ranked in offense this year and offensive efficiency. They were 20th. So Steph Curry has one of the greatest shooting seasons of all time, and the rest of the team was 20th.
So I'm going to take that, and here's my hot take. I don't actually think you'll agree with me. I think Golden State's going to win. Not the whole thing.
Yeah.
But that play-in game against the Lakers, I think they're going to win. And I think they're going to win because Steph's been good for 30 every night. But I think the wild card here is Draymond. Draymond's not who he used to be, but he's not far off of it. And we've talked about this before, whether we owed him an apology. I sent you a text the other night. I was in the tub, of all places, looking up NBA total. And I was shocked to discover that Draymond Green finished 4th in the NBA in assists.
Yep.
4th. He's not much of a scorer. But God, does he ever know how to play basketball? And there's something about the winning pedigree of Golden State and those two guys that I think can elevate the rest of their team, which isn't very good. But LeBron's been banged up. Anthony Davis has looked, you know, here and there. I actually have more question marks about which Lakers show up than I do Golden State. You factor in the Curry factor, kind of like the Warriors.
It's all about, as you said, it's all about health. The ankle of LeBron ain't 100%. Anthony Davis is rarely 100%. So it comes out of that. If those guys are at all banged up, then yeah, I give Golden State a really good chance. Draymond Green actually had more assists per game than points per game, which is sometimes great, but sometimes the problem is that he's afraid, I think, sometimes to take a shot. But if the Lakers, if they're as banged up as they've looked, then yeah, you have to give Golden State an excellent chance.
And it would be the worst thing for the playoffs. The idea of a LeBron-less playoffs and the easier path for the evil Clippers to make it to the final, it's my worst-case scenario, so I'm not pulling for this as much as I, like every other 10-year-old in the world, love Steph Curry. But what a hit to the playoffs that would be if the Lakers were out. I can almost not even wrap my brain around it.
What the Clippers did was shameful. Because they basically decided to duck the Lakers as long as possible. The two worst teams in the NBA in terms of tanking is OKC and Houston. And the Clippers lost to both of them on purpose.
You know, I hate the Clippers and for so many reasons, but the Clippers remind me of that guy who doesn't want to bat on the final day of the season because he's got a 300 average and he doesn't want it to dip. It's like they will avoid a fight as opposed to try and win it.
Meanwhile, Ted Williams, who was at like 399.98, so he was 400. He played, I think it was like a doubleheader and went like 5 for 7 or something. And I'm going to screw up the stats and ended up hitting like 402. Be like Ted Williams.
Exactly. Except for the part where you're mean and surly and hate your organization for 50 years. But other than that, be like Ted Williams.
The man fought in the Second World War and in Korea. He can be as mean as he wants. And oh, no, Bobby's a hell of a fisherman. Yeah, I know.
I'm just kidding. He was no Ty Cobb. Okay, no. So yeah. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Raptors because we can kind of do an abbreviated season in review here, I think.
Yeah.
The season's officially done. Masai, thoughts?
You've got to do whatever it takes to get him back. It's as simple as that. It's if he wants a stake in ownership, you give him a stake in ownership. I have never, and I know this is probably recency bias and just bias. I can't remember another executive who was as beloved as Masai is by everyone within the organization and every player. I mean, they love him. You don't hear Jason Tatum waxing poetic about Danny Ainge.
No. Okay. So here's my blanket thought on this. If he's going to go, just go. I saw that Michael Grange put out an article about, you know, the Raptors are looking good to maybe get him back. And you know where it threw me back to? It threw me back to the what's Kawhi going to do?
Yeah.
Right down to the helicopter from CP24 following him to his meeting. And I thought, I can't do this again. I can't, like, listen to what Kawhi's fifth cousin's dry cleaner thought he heard his uncle say. If he's going to go, just go. And here's the other thing. I don't think Masai can bring us a championship anytime real soon. So it's not like if we lose him, we're screwed. I think it's the difference between being a really good team and quite a good team. I can't see the Raptors taking too many steps back. MLSE has gotten too good at this sports game. And let's not forget, they brought in Tim Lywicki, who brought in Masai. So it's, you know, they brought in Shanny. You know, they brought in Tim Bezbachenko. They brought in a lot of people in their respective sports. It's weird to talk about MLSE this way, but they're the real bosses, not Masai. And they have an eye for talent. So if he did go, I think we'd eventually get someone back who's pretty good. And Bobby Webster seems to be smart right now. So, you know, I don't see us beating Brooklyn anytime soon. I don't see us beating Philadelphia anytime soon. It's not like Masai suddenly makes next year a championship season. I just
know, but
I don't want him to go to the Knicks.
Oh yeah, of course. Well, yeah, there is that. I mean, I'm a Knicks. Well, no, I'm a Knicks fan. That wouldn't be the worst. But you want? Here's what about Masai. You're right. They doesn't feel like they can win anytime soon, until a moment opens up, and Masai swings a deal to bring in a Ben Simmons. You know, he finds a way. You know, he finds his next Kawhi Leonard, and that's the key, is to keep developing, getting better. And what you hope for eventually is one of those stars has to choose between two teams. One of them is Toronto, and Masai puts them over the top.
Let's not forget that what Masai accomplished with the Kawhi deal wasn't just brave and brilliant. It was brave, brilliant, and incredibly rare.
Yes.
It's not like Masai made, you know, the best out of a situation that presents itself three or four times a year. Everything aligned for the unthinkable to happen, which was to get a first line superstar to come to a third line NBA city. And Toronto's not that anymore. I'd argue that we're a second line NBA city. But those teams still don't get the superstars. So it's not like what Masai did was, he didn't create the luck. He seized it. And we've had a lot of luck, and I don't think we're going to get that for a while.
No, you're right. The odds of something, like, so many things had to go right. Kawhi stopped, you know, no longer trusting the Spurs, and members of the Spurs wondering about Kawhi. And then San Antonio wasn't going to trade him to a lot of different markets. You know, wanted to, you know, keep him out of the West. Like, a lot of dominoes had to fall for Kawhi Leonard to end up as a Raptor.
And let's not forget, the team had to be good enough that he could be the final piece.
Yes.
Of a championship team. The Raptors were already a damn good team, and he basically took them over the top and lost a guy that, you know, as much as he was loved, was seen as a big part of the problem why the team ultimately couldn't win big. A lot happened. You know, that said, I think the more interesting question than the Masai thing is the Lowry question, because you would want Masai to come back almost no matter what. I'm not sure that's true of Lowry.
The obvious thing is it depends on term and money. And in his press conference, you could tell how much he loves Toronto. Like, he was listing off, he missed being on the Gardner and the DVP. So he loves Toronto. But he said, you know, also my next contract, it'll depend on family. It'll depend on money, and it'll depend on term. I think there'll be a team out there that will give him more than makes sense for the Raptors to.
Which is why when he goes, and I think he's gone. Do you think he's gone?
Yes, I think he's gone.
Yeah, when he goes, I'll be happy, as long as it's not to a team where he could cause it. Like, just don't go to Philly or the Clippers. Philly or the Clippers. Everybody else I can live with.
Okay, because, like, he signs like a 2-year with a second year player option for like a ton of money. And again, I don't know all the cap considerations, but a Miami and a Philly and Clippers, those are all the teams that make the most sense. And if the Clippers don't win a title this year, especially with Kawhi not locked up, there's more pressure on the Clippers to win than anyone else, even more than Milwaukee or Brooklyn or any of these other teams.
It's a great point that they're all kind of heartbreaking organizations for him to join. If you're a Raptors fan, look, anybody but the Clippers is my motto for everything. But I could live with Miami. I could live with Miami because I don't hate Miami. Philly would be tough just because of the Doc Rivers factor. Yeah. There are no good scenarios, really, but it's going to happen.
Yeah. Let him go to Memphis. Oh, let's see. Where would be a good spot? Oh, yeah. Let him go to Memphis. He can hang out with Dylan Brooks. Make Canada's own Dylan Brooks better.
Memphis. It'd be great if he went down to New Orleans.
Oh, wait a sec. OKC. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I'm just thinking, where can Kyle Lowry go to make Canadian players better?
You know, maybe he can go Denver.
Perfect.
When Denver loses, maybe they're going to sign Kyle Lowry, because that's where I thought they were going to trade for him. And then that team can be just about anybody. Yeah, okay, so let's pull for Denver.
Denver, done. Love it, 100%. Kyle Lowry, Denver Nugget.
Okay, we threatened it the whole show. Shall we talk about the Loki trailer?
Oh, my God, it looks so good. Oh, just that version of Owen Wilson in my life, I am here for that every day.
It's just a one-minute clip. And it's Loki in handcuffs as a prisoner being led down an elevator by Owen Wilson. And they just talk.
Yep.
No action, little bit of exposition, not too much. And they just seem so fun together. Like, this is clearly going to be a buddy comedy, and they're both hilarious.
Yeah. It's what I mean. We don't know what it's going to be, but from that clip, the two things that stick out is like, these are two really good actors that work well off one another. And some really good writing that only has one little smidge of exposition, which I'm fine with. These are big, huge movies with weird concepts. You need exposition. Don't be like, you know, movies that try to confuse you until the very end.
You and I have talked about this, how up till now, WandaVision certainly flirted with it, and Captain America, or the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Yeah. Less so. But this feels like when the next phase is really going to kick in. This and the Doctor Strange movie feel like we're really going to start to get a sense of what's the next big arc. And I'm dying to find out what the next big arc is. Do you care? Do you care as much as I do?
I care probably a little bit less than you, but I care. And this one opens the door for Doctor Strange because it is about the timeline. But you could bring back Captain America if you wanted, like, just because, you know, now we're getting really nerdy. You know, he had to go back and deal with some stuff from the past. I mean, there's a lot of angles here.
And also so many casting opportunities. Robert Downey Jr. is not dead in another universe.
Ooh.
The multiverse is going to be insane. The trick will be to make it coherent. But I think we all accept a certain degree of incoherence with the multiverse. Let's see what happens.
Bob, I got a question. I don't know if you know the answer to this. Do you know, is Robert Downey Jr. married?
I believe he is.
I know he has been. Okay. Well, if he's married, and everything I'm going to say is really mean, but we need to get him divorced. It's got to be a bad divorce where she takes him for all his money and he's got to go full Nick Cage and maybe take roles he doesn't want to take. He doesn't want to be Iron Man again. He doesn't want to be Tony Stark. But boom, he's now been cleaned by lawyers. And look out, everyone, Iron Man's back.
Do you remember the movie he made with Robert Duvall? It was about the judge.
The judge.
Yeah. The best thing that happened to Marvel is that didn't really work.
It's true. It didn't.
Whenever somebody, like, the best thing for the world of comedy is whenever Jim Carrey realizes maybe he shouldn't be a dramatic actor.
Mm-hmm.
He should just go back to doing, like, crazy faces and sticking his arm behind his head and being generally brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the thespians. It'll be interesting when all these thespians who want to go on and see what the real world is like. It's like when people leave big companies, they're like, I want to go out on my own. I want to run my own business. I want to be my own boss. And then you're like, oh my God, this is hard.
Yeah.
Ass kicked and I'm totally broke. That's like when you leave a big franchise so that you can see what quote unquote other roles are out there.
Oh, 100%. I'm going to start my own business. Well, goodbye money and time. I hope that has helped your self-esteem. If you don't mind, I'll be over here at the big company wearing my bathing suit.
By the way, and we'll get back to the bathing suit in just one second. I have started my own business.
Yep.
And it's hard. It's so hard. I lost a huge amount of money and I made a lot of money. and then lost that. And I think everybody should do it at least once. At least once, everybody should try to run their own business. If the only thing you get out of it is appreciation for the gig you do have, mm-hmm. if that's the only thing. I think it's really only for certain people who just kind of want to do things their own way, and that's good enough. Like, success, no, like, the form of success is to just be your own person and not put up with the BS you get in the corporate world, which is there. But I actually think, there's something heroic about entrepreneurs. And I think there's something heroic about people who run their own small businesses. So before we get to your bathing suit, just a quick Bob and Matt shout out. If you run your own business, we haven't done the roll call of heroes in a long time, but you would be on it.
That's absolutely true. Absolutely. I 100% agree. With my background in wine, I've been around tons of restaurants and the restaurateurs and the people that work in restaurants. And it is a sacrifice. It is a grind. It is a passion. It is hard as hell. And then shout out to all the little winemakers out there. My God, same thing. So yes, Bob, 100% agree.
So final thought about the bathing suit.
Yeah.
At what point is it inappropriate to walk around in your bathing suit at home? Like when you have people over and stuff. Like, are you allowed with company, even if they're friends, to walk around in your bathing suit, or are you obliged to cover up? Because they are your underwear, right?
Yeah, but they're basically like a pair of shorts. It's fine.
Well, no, not always.
Well, not yours, Bob. I mean, you know, sorry if I'm not wearing your nut busters. You know, mine have pockets. You know, large pockets. So, my thing is, though, I can't wear a bathing suit to dinner. Like after we're done with this. Unless I jump in the water, I'm going to put on a pair of pants, you know, cause I'm up at the cottage with a couple of family members.
Wait, you put on a pair of pants? Shorts though.
Oh no, it's not shorts weather yet, Bob. It's still pants weather.
Okay. Oh, I see you're saying like right now.
Yeah.
I'll leave you with this thought. One of the greatest feelings in the whole world is when your bathing suit dries on you.
Oh yeah.
When the sun has just cooked your bathing suit just enough. So it has that toasty, seaweedy, nori kind of crispiness to it.
Yep.
That's the best.
Yep, 100%.
That's when you know you've had a good afternoon. Well, that's all I basically got. So next time we get together, will be Friday. We'll talk Leafs game one and anything else that happens.
We got Leafs game one and all the NBA matchups will be completely set.
Yeah, so crazy. What a crazy couple days. I'm doing all my work before 7 o'clock tonight, and then I'm shutting off my phone, and I'm just going to sports out.
Oh, we got 2 months of sports out. So good. Well, so, Bob, enjoy your night. I will chat with you on Friday.
Take it easy, Maddie.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.